Looks like it's been a long time meeting all of you. 8th Canto, overview we met. Na? Sorry for boring you with the overview. So next time we'll plan something better. Especially Padmukh Nimai Prabhu is very heavy. The way we are taking it's little too much to handle so much data in within 3 hours. So next time we'll do it better. So 9th canto, chapter number 6. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunadhanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamsya He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this 9th canto, one of the prominent themes is Ishanukatha. Ishanukatha means Lord's pastimes and devotee's pastimes, right? So the pastimes of the Lord in his various incarnations and his devotee's pastimes also, devotee's activities also. According to Jiva Goswami, this topic of Ishanukatha is prominently seen in 9th canto and 4th canto also. So the 10 topics of Bhagavatam we often discussed, right? They are found in all 12 cantos of Bhagavatam, not just, they don't go in a sequential manner, right? Consecutively, okay, this canto dealt with this topic, next canto should deal with the next topic, not that way. Or our Sutta Goswami, or Parikshit Maharaj, At the end of second canto, he gives the definitions of all the 10 topics of a major Purana. Atra sargo visargasya sthanam poshanam utayah, manvantara ishanakatha, nirodho muktirashraya. So these are the 10 topics of a Mahapurana. Bhagavatam being a Mahapurana also covers these 10 topics. So just because Sukadeva Goswami spoke this verse or defined all these 10 topics at the end of 10th canto, second canto in the 10th chapter, last chapter, one may tend to think that Bhagavatam topics actually begin from 3rd canto. Right? 3rd canto should be Sarga, Visarga. Right? One may think like that. But it is not completely a fact. First two cantos also are very much a part of Bhagavatam. Right? They at least discuss Sarga, Visarga and Poshana. Minimum, those topics are covered. So all the 10 topics are covered with different degrees of emphasis in all the 12 cantos. And the first two cantos also discuss these major topics. It's not that these 10 topics are discussed in only the 10 cantos. 3 to 12. They are discussed in the first two cantos also. Especially the Ashraya Tattva. Ashraya Tattva is what? Krishna. That is majorly discussed in 10th canto, but that is there in many parts of Bhagavatam also. Very much in the first canto. So the first six questions are, first three chapters. The sages and Suta Goswami discussion, there is very much a description of Ashraya Tattva. Right, third chapter, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Right, Indrari Vyakalam Lokam Radhyanti Yuge Yuge. Ete Jam Sakala Krishna, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. So, it's very much describing Ashraya Tattva. Fourth chapter to fifth, four, five, six, the first three chapters, next three chapters, where this Vyasadeva and Narada Muni Samvad is happening. There also a lot of discussion about Bhakti and Krishna. You didn't glorify Krishna and his activities. So he's emphasizing, bringing to Ashraya Tattva. Then, seventh chapter, Atma Ramasya Manayu. Then, eighth chapter, ninth chapter, very much glorification of Krishna, done by his dear devotees. Right? Then, 10th chapter, 11th chapter also, there is a lot of direct glorification of Krishna. So like that, throughout Bhagavatam, Ashraya Tattva is also emphasized. And many topics are there. And now 9th canto, the prominent theme is Ishanukatha. But this is leading to the next upcoming discussion on 10th canto. Right? So 10th canto is Ashraya, majorly. And 9th canto is leading us into the 10th canto by describing the various kings in 9th canto, Sun dynasty and Moon dynasty. So describing so many kings, and eventually it's leading to 10th canto, Ashraya. So the Dasamasya Visuddhyartham Navana Mehalakshanam. What is the next line? 2.1.2. Follow you. Dasamasya Visuddhyartham. So meaning I'll tell you at least. So the purpose of describing all these 9 topics is to bring the reader to Ashraya Tattva. So the purpose of this whole Ishanukatha, 9th canto, is to bring you to a level of appreciating the 10th canto. Without going through 9th canto or 9 cantos, you can't appreciate 10th canto. Right? Very soon, maybe in a couple of weeks only, you will enter 10th canto. So you have to prepare your mood. Right? Completing 9 chapters, 9 cantos is giving you some kind of qualification or whatever for entering the 10th canto. So the purpose of all these 9 topics is actually to discuss the 10th topic, Ashraya. What is that? Dasamasya Visuddhyartham Navana Mimalakshanam Varnayanti Mahatmanas. Srutena Arthena Cha Anjasa. Okay, Srutena is what? Meaning? Then Arthena? Yes. So directly or indirectly, they are discussing these 9 topics, either directly by quoting evidence or by giving so many explanations and examples. They are discussing these 9 topics only to bring the reader to 10th topic. So directly they are glorifying Krishna in many contexts. So the Ashraya Tattva is glorified directly in the first 9 cantos at many places. Right, 3rd chapter, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, all that, and many prayers also. And indirectly also he is glorified in many places. Right, indirectly Krishna is glorified in so many places. So directly or indirectly, Ashraya Tattva is emphasized in all the other, in the discussion of all the other 9 topics also. So here also, 9th canto, we can't take it lightly. Just because only series of names are coming, it's boring sometimes, right? So we can't do it like that. Just by reading the names of all these sages and all these great kings, one gets purified. Right? So what is that? Everything in connection with Krishna. What is that Sanskrit verse? After all it is Yukta Vairagya. What is the Yukta Vairagya verse? Krishna Nirbhande Krishna Sambande Yukta Vairagya Machyate. Okay. Somehow or the other everything is connected with Krishna. So it's all Bhagavatam. So 9th canto, with that mood, we'll enter 9th canto. We already entered, we'll enter 6th chapter of 9th canto. Yes, Prabhu. Ishanu Katha.
Liberation is there.
Liberation. This is Mukti actually. That is 11th canto. Yeah, there is a lot of confusion about these topics which are given by BBT. Some even say that Prabhupada didn't give these names. Somebody was asking this question only recently. Creative impetus. First canto, creation. Second canto, what is that? Cosmic manifestation. And Prabhupada gives an explanation also in the second canto, first chapter. Prabhupada gives why first canto is named like that, why second canto is named like that. And Prabhupada in his Jaladuta diary, he writes the 10 topics of, this 10 cantos with corresponding to the names. Right? Third canto, he names Sarga there. So that is one praman for us. Some people even say that Prabhupada has not given these names. So there is some confusion about this, but we can't exactly take this because there is some confusion about this. Some people even say that Prabhupada has not given it. According to Jiva Goswami and in Tattva Sandarbha also, there which canto discusses which topic, that is very clearly mentioned there. Which canto discusses which all topics, right? That is mentioned. I requested Gauram Prabhu to give you a seminar before you enter 10th canto. Krishna willing, Prabhuji will address us on the 10 topics of Bhagavatam. Right, giving you entry into Ashraya Tattva. Right, so that seminar will make things more clear. So Suta Goswami defines in the 12th canto. Suta Goswami discusses so many Puranas, characteristics of various Puranas, the major Puranas, 18 major Puranas are there. So the major Puranas have 10 topics, lesser Puranas have 5 topics only. But within those 5 topics only, they will cover the 10 topics. Right? And Sukata Goswami defines Sarga, Visarga, Sthanam, Poshanam, all these 10 topics in his own style in the Sukata Goswami defines in the 12th canto. Then Parikshit Maharaj asks this question and Sukadeva Goswami defines the 10 topics in a different style with a different name in 2nd canto, 10th chapter. So these two appear differently. But they are not different. They are same. Right? So that is also nicely mentioned. Recently I was working on that document. Okay, we'll discuss on that time if Gauram Prabhu is there. Okay, so basically about the name that which you asked, there is some kind of controversy and confusion about this. But what exactly, technically, what should be the name of each canto, that we'll understand from that seminar. Okay, Jiva Goswami gives actually. Basically, name should be depending on the contents of the canto, right? So like that we can understand. So this is, like many acharyas, many references prove that this is majorly discussing Ishanukatha. First verse of 6th chapter. Shri Sukha Uvacha Virupah Ketuman Chambur Ambarisha Sutastriya. Then Virupat Prashridasvobhut Prashadasvobhut Tatputrastu Rathirata Rathitara.
Shukadev Goswami said, O Maharaj Parikshit, Ambarish had three sons named Virupa, Ketuman and Shambhu. From Virupa came a son named Prishadashva, and from Prishadashva came a son named Rathitara.
So this chapter, now fourth chapter and fifth chapter are describing the story of Ambarish Maharaj, right? So this chapter continues with the descendants of Ambarish Maharaj. So Ambarish Maharaj's son is Virupa, right? And Ketuman and Shambhu, three sons are there. So one son's descendants are mentioned. So Virupa's son is Prishadasva and his son is Rathitara. So for you to understand the flow of ninth canto nicely, you should be constantly in touch with the table which is given at the end. Genealogical table, which is given at the end of the book. So this is how actually in the beginning of ninth canto, Parikshit Maharaj asked the question, I want to know the family of dynasty of Vaivasvat Manu. So the whole dynasty is given here. So Vaivasvat Manu has 10 sons. So amongst the 10 sons, the first is Sudyumna, who became Ila, who became a female, and his and her descendants are mentioned here. Then other sons are covered till now. Right? Now we are in the context of this last line, right? Nabhaga. Nabhaga's son is Nabhaga. Nabhaga is Ambarish Maharaj. So this line we are discussing. Right? So of all these 10 sons, actually 11 sons. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So this, out of these 11 sons, one is like daughter and son. Then 10 are born from Shraddha, his wife. And one person, his name is Ikshvaku. He is born not from Shraddha, he is born from sneeze. Vaivasvata Manu sneezed. Then cheek. Okay. Then Ikshvaku is born. So when in the beginning, he sneezed and Ikshvaku came out. So when it is mentioned that Shraddha gave birth to 10 sons, it's a generalization. Okay, it's not specifically that Ikshvaku is also born out of the womb of Shraddha only, like that. Now we are in this line, Ambarish Maharaj's line. Okay, you can see here. Then second verse. Rathitara had no sons. Therefore he requested the great sage Angira to beget sons from him. So Rathitara didn't have any sons. So he went to Angira. So whenever there are no sons for a Kshatriya, he can always take shelter of a Brahmana. So a person who belongs to certain Varna, he can beget sons for some other person who is little lower in caste. So Kshatriya's wife could be impregnated by a Brahmana if that is a requirement. If Kshatriya could not produce a son, a Brahmana can come and produce son in Kshatriya's wife's womb. Right? That is allowed. So this concept is called Kshetra Jata. And the children who were born out of that lady, so they are considered to be the children of her husband only, not the Brahmana who is coming and impregnating. Just like Ambika Ambalika, so they were impregnated by Vyasadeva. Right? So when Vichitra Virya, you know, left his body, and Kuru dynasty did not have any children, so then Satyavati called her own son, Vyasadeva, to impregnate Ambalika and Ambika. Then Dhritarashtra came out, and who is that? Pandu Maharaj. Then Vidura also came out of some Dasi. Right? So these three were born. But these three were not considered sages. Right? They were princes of Hastinapur only. They were princes of Kuru dynasty only. Although they were born from Vyasadeva. So the children are generally considered sons of, they are considered both Brahmanas and Kshatriyas also. But they are majorly claimed by their father only. Although they did not produce, he did not produce them. Right, clear? Here Ratitara did not have any sons. Therefore he requested the great sage Angira to beget sons for him. Because of this request, Angira begot sons in the womb of Ratitara's wife. All these sons were born with Brahminical prowess. So having been born from womb of Ratitara's wife, all these sons were known as the dynasty of Ratitara. But because they were born of the semen of Angira, they were also dynasty of Angira also. Right? Among the progeny of Ratitara, these sons were the most prominent sons. Owing to their birth, they were considered Brahmanas. So they were Brahmanas also. They were Kshatriyas also. They have had a mixed caste. Then, next. So, till now, there is a description of almost 9 sons of Manu, Vaivasvat Manu. Now, there is another son, Ikshvaku. So, his descendants will be described from this point, from 4th verse onwards. So, Ikshvaku's descendants will go for, you know, long line. You see, if you see in the genealogical table, one of the longest dynasties was Ikshvaku's. Here only Lord Ramachandra will come. So 6th chapter, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th is Ikshvaku dynasty only. Then 4th verse. The son of Manu was Ikshvaku. When Manu was sneezing, Ikshvaku was born from Manu's nostrils. How does that happen? It could happen. He is Manu. He is not like some Kali Yuga fellow. King Ikshvaku had 100 sons, of whom Vikukshi, Nimi and Dandaka were most prominent. And this Ikshvaku had 100 sons. Of the 100 sons, 25 became kings of the western side of Aryavarta. Aryavarta means the range between Himalayas and Vindhya, mountain range. Right? Himalaya mountain range is there, Vindhya mountain range is there. So the whatever is the land between these two mountain ranges is called Aryavarta. And the eastern side of Aryavarta is ruled by 25 of his sons, Ikshvaku's sons. And the western side is ruled by 25 more of his sons. And the middle part is ruled by these three prominent sons, who are the eldest sons. Who are they? Vikukshi, Nimi and Dandaka. These three were ruling the middle part. And other sons, how many are left? 47. 25 east, 25 west, 3 middle, right? 47 are left. They were ruling north and south. Okay. Now, 6th verse till 9th verse, there is a story of Vikukshi. Vikukshi is one of the prominent sons of Ikshvaku. So, his story is given in the 6th to 9th verses. So this Vikukshi, I'll summarize the story. You can read the translations later. So this Vikukshi, once he was asked by Ikshvaku. Ikshvaku was doing some yajna, shraddha, okay, ceremony he was doing. Then he asked. In some of the ceremonies, there is some flesh offering also. That is allowed in those days. So then this Vikukshi was asked to go and get some fresh flesh from the forest. So Vikukshi, being a prince, he goes out for hunting. And then he hunts some animals. And then he, you know, procures a lot of flesh. And then he falls asleep. Then he was tired and he became hungry. Then he ate one of the rabbits from there. Okay? The flesh which he has got for yajna, that flesh only he used to satisfy his hunger. So then he just came and then offered the whatever flesh is remaining to for the sacrifice. Then Vasishta, who was actually the main priest of the Ikshvaku dynasty, so he detected this is contaminated flesh. Right? This is impure. This cannot be offered in the sacrifice. So your son has eaten it. Then Ikshvaku becomes very angry. How did you contaminate? You didn't follow the regulative principles. It is an offense to eat before offering. Right? So you get out of my kingdom. So he went out of the kingdom. Then that is the story of Vikukshu. And because he ate a rabbit, he got the name Sheshada. Sheshada means eater of rabbit. So Vikukshi has another name called Sheshada. Right? So now eventually Vasishta gave spiritual knowledge to Ikshvaku, and Ikshvaku attained perfection. And then once he attained perfection, there is no king. So this Vikukshi, who was actually sent out of the kingdom, was called back. So he came back and he became the king. Right? That is the story of Vikukshi. Okay? Please read translations from 6th verse. Makanlal Prabhu. 6 to 9.
During the months of January, February and March, oblations offered to the forefathers are called Ashtaka Shraddha. The Shraddha ceremony is held during the dark fortnight of the month. When Maharaj Ikshvaku was performing his oblation in this ceremony, he ordered his son Vikukshi to go immediately to the forest to bring some pure flesh. Thereafter, Ikshvaku's son Vikukshi went to the forest and killed many animals suitable for being offered as oblations. But when fatigued and hungry, he became forgetful and ate a rabbit he had killed. Vikukshi offered the remnants of the flesh to King Ikshvaku, who gave it to Vasishta for purification. But Vasishta could immediately understand that part of the flesh had already been taken by Vikukshi, and therefore he said that it was unfit to be used in the Shraddha ceremony.
Actually, in these purports, 7th and 8th purports, Prabhupada gives many points that how could this flesh be offered, right? So, Kshatriyas can kill animals, it is allowed for them, and they can hunt, they can go into the forest. But the flesh of the animals, flesh of certain animals, no, it was suitable to be offered for a particular type of yajna. It's not that flesh is offered in every yajna. Here, this is specific yajna called Ashtaka Shraddha, in that flesh is recommended, so it is done. But one cannot do this kind of sacrifices in Kali Yuga. Aswamedam Gavalambum Sanyasam Palapaitrukam Devarena Sutotpatim Kalau Pancha Vivarchayet. So these five things are forbidden in Kali Yuga. Aswamedam Gavalambum. So sacrificing a horse or sacrificing a cow, these two are prohibited. Then sannyasam, taking sannyas is also prohibited. Then palapaitrikam means offering flesh in yajna. Okay, flesh offering to forefathers, that is also condemned. That is forbidden in Kali Yuga. Then devarena sutotpattim, okay, a brother impregnating his brother's wife, that is also not recommended in Kali Yuga. And in those days, Kshatriyas would go out and kill animals for sacrifices. But in Kali Yuga, hardly there are any Kshatriyas. They are all Sudras only. Sudras are killing animals here. So, Kshatriyas are allowed to kill, but not Sudras. Right? Sudras were allowed to eat flesh by offering it to Kali once in a month, or some frequency is given. Right? Once in a while. Not on a regular basis. They can offer some lower animals like goats to Kali or some similar demigods, and then they can eat that. But cows should never be slaughtered. Okay. Even in Kali Yuga also, even in any other Yuga. Of course, Ashwamedha, Gavalambam is there. In a sacrifice that is allowed, that's a bona fide process. Then in the 8th verse, Prabhupada says, because this person has eaten flesh, that cannot be offered in sacrifice. Similarly, before in our deity worship also, if someone offers some contaminated things, right, if someone eats it, then one should not offer it. That is obviously understood. Right? Those who are engaged in deity worship must know this very well, so that they may be saved from sevaprad in deity worship. In fact, one should not even see, except the pujari and backup person, others should not even see the menu. Right? Because although he will not eat it physically, he will start eating it mentally. So better not to even see the offering, bhoga. You can see prasad, okay, but you can't see bhoga. The 9th verse. Yes, Prabhu.
When King Ikshvaku, thus informed by Vasishtha, understood what his son Vikukshi had done, he was extremely angry. Thus he ordered Vikukshi to leave the country because Vikukshi had violated the regulative principles. Having been instructed by the great and learned Brahmana Vasishtha, who discoursed about the absolute truth, Maharaj Ikshvaku became renounced. By following the principles of for a yogi, he certainly achieved the supreme perfection after giving up his material body. After his father's disappearance, Vikukshi returned to the country and thus became the king, ruling the planet Earth and performing various sacrifices to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vikukshi later became celebrated as Sasada.
Sasada means eater of rabbit. So I already mentioned this.
The son of Sasada was Puranjaya, who is also known as Indravaha and sometimes as Kakusta. Please hear from me how he received different names for different activities.
Now, Sukadeva Goswami is continuing the dynasty of Ikshvaku. Ikshvaku had 3 prominent sons. Out of them, prominent is Sasada or Vikukshi. And he had one more son, his name is Puranjaya. He had 2 other names, Puranjaya, then Indravaha, then Kakustha. Right, Kakustha is 3 names he has. So why he got 3 names? This Puranjaya, he actually he got these 3 names only by one activity. Do one activity, you'll get 3 names. So once demigods were tormented by the demons, they need a very great warrior to fight against the demons. Then Puranjaya was a very great warrior. So he fought on the side of demigods. He fought against the demons. But he had one condition. He told Indra, I will fight against the demons only if you become my carrier. Right? You should become my vahan. Right, you should carry me in the fight, then only I will fight. Then Indra felt ashamed. How can I become your carrier? He was not very eager. He was not at all excited with this proposal. But Vishnu came and he said, I become chariot driver of Arjun. What is your problem? Right, you should become bull carrier of Puranjaya. Okay, you carry him, you assist him in the fight, then he will kill the demons and give you the kingdom back. So Vishnu ordered, he can't do anything. So Indra became a bull, very big bull. And our this person, Puranjaya, he sat on the hump of the bull and started fighting against the demons. So he fought with the demons and he killed the demons. That's why his name is Puranjaya. He conquered the residence of the demons. That's why his name is Puranjaya. One name. Second name, Indravaha. Indra became his vahan. That's why his name is Indravaha. Third name, Kakustha. Kakustha means situated on the hump of the bull. That's why his name is Kakustha. So he has 3 names. That is the story of Puranjaya. Yeah, please read.
Formerly, there was a devastating war between the demigods and the demons. The demigods, having been defeated, accepted Puranjaya as their assistant and then conquered the demons. Therefore, this hero is known as Puranjaya. He who conquered the residence of the demons. Puranjaya agreed to kill all the demons on the condition that Indra would be his carrier. Because of pride, Indra could not accept this proposal, but later, by the order of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, Indra did accept it and became a great bull carrier for Puranjaya. Well protected by armor and desiring to fight, Puranjaya took up a transcendental bow and very sharp arrows. And while being highly praised by the demigods, he got up on the back of the bull, Indra, and sat on its hump. Thus he is known as Kakutstha. Being empowered by Lord Vishnu, who is the super soul and the supreme person, Puranjaya sat on the great bull and is therefore known as Indravaha. Surrounded by the demigods, he attacked the residents of the demons in the west. There was a fierce battle between the demons and Puranjaya. Indeed, it was so fierce that when one hears about it, one's hair stand on end. All the demons bold enough to come before Puranjaya were immediately sent to the residence of Yamraj by his arrows. To save themselves from the blazing arrows of Indravaha, which resembled the flames of devastation at the end of the millennium, the demons who remained when the rest of the army was killed fled very quickly to their respective homes. After conquering the enemy, the saintly king Puranjaya gave everything, including the enemy's riches and wives, to Indra, who carries a thunderbolt. For this, he is celebrated as Puranjaya. Thus, Puranjaya is known by different names because of his different activities.
Now, from the 20th verse onwards, Parikshit, Sukadeva Goswami is continuing the dynasty of Ikshvaku. Now, where are we? Manu's son is Ikshvaku. Ikshvaku's son is who? Shashada. Or Vikukshi, and his son is Puranjaya, or Indravaha, or Kakustha. We came till that point. Continuing that, Puranjaya's son is Anena. Anena's son is Prithu. This Prithu is not Prithumara, the fourth canto. And Prithu's son is Vishwagandhi, and his son is Chandra. This Chandra is not moon god. And Chandra's son is Yavanashva. Then Yavanashva, son of Yavanashva was what is Sravastha. So his activity, our Sukadeva Goswami summarizes in just one line. He constructed a township known as Sravastipuri. That's all is mentioned. Then the son of Sravastha was Brihadashva, and his son is Kovalayashva. So in this way the dynasty increased. So now Kovalayashva's activities are a little more elaborated. To satisfy the sage Utkanta, Utanka, the great powerful Kovalayashva killed a demon, Dhundu. Dhundu. He did this with the assistance of his 21,000 sons. So this Kovalayashva had 21,000 sons. And he fought against a demon named Dhundu. And his name became Dhundumara. Dhundu ko mar diya, he became Dhundumara. So, and in that fight, out of 21,000 sons, 20,997 sons were died. Only 3 sons were left. Right, Dhundu killed his 20,000 minus 3 sons, and 3 sons were left. Okay. Oh, Maharaj Parikshit, for this reason, Kovalayashva is celebrated as Dhundumara, the killer of Dhundu. All but 3 of his sons, however, were burned to ashes by the fire emanating from Dhundu's mouth. The remaining sons were Drihashva, Kapilashva, and Bhadrasva. From Drihashva came a son named Haryashva, whose son is celebrated as Nikumbha. The son of Nikumbha was Bahulashva. Then his son is Krishashva. Then his son is Senajit. Then his son is Yavanashva. Then Yavanashva had no sons. He retired from family life and went to the forest. So Yavanashva's activities, Sukadeva Goswami, just he zooms into his activities. So Yavanashva did not have any sons. So he took to Vanaprastha and he went to forest. He had no sons, but he had 100 wives. So 100 wives also went to forest along with Yavanashva. But all of them were very morose. Although they went to Vanaprastha, okay, Vanaprastha life means you have to live without any anxiety. But all of them were anxious because they didn't have a son. So the sages saw them and they felt compassion. Okay, let's do some yajna so that this person gets a son. Then they read a sacrifice. That is Indra Yajna. Then in that sacrifice is done so that this person will get a son. So the son, the sanctified water of that sacrifice is kept in a pot. So what is that pot meant for? This sanctified water, this mantra chanted water, if this is taken by the wife of the king, and she will become pregnant and she will give birth to a son. But what happened by the will of the providence, in the middle of the night, Yuvanashva got up from his sleep and he felt very thirsty. And he went and drank this water. And all the sages were bewildered. How come he drank this water? This will of the providence is very strong. Okay, supreme will is very strong. So eventually, this Yavanashva gave birth to a son. From the right side of Yavanashva's abdomen came a son. Right, that is the birth of King Mandhata. So Mandhata story is little elaborate. That is the rest of the story, rest of the chapter. Right? Yes, Prabhu, read Yavanashva.
Although Yuvanashva went to the forest, into the forest with 100 wives, all of them were very morose. The sages in the forest, however, being very kind to the king, began very carefully and attentively performing an Indra Yajna so that the king might have a son. Being thirsty one night, the king entered the arena of sacrifice, and when he saw all the brahmanas lying down, he personally drank the sanctified water meant to be drunk by his wife. When the brahmanas got up from bed and saw the water pot empty, they inquired who had done this work of drinking the water meant for begetting a child. When the brahmanas came to understand that the king, inspired by the supreme controller, had drunk the water, they all exclaimed, "Alas, the power of providence is real power.
No one can counteract the power of the supreme."
In this way, they offered their respectful obeisance unto the Lord. Thereafter, in due course of time, a son with all the good symptoms of a powerful king came forth from the lower right side of King Yuvanashva's abdomen.
See, these sages were intelligent enough to accept this as will of the supreme. They didn't chastise the king. Why did you drink? So they just accepted it as Lord's will. Yes, go ahead.
The baby cried so much for breast milk that all the brahmanas were very unhappy.
This I didn't tell you. So when baby is born, he wants milk from mother. And here is father, there is no mother. Right? So in that sacrifice which they conducted, they worshipped Indra also. We Indra Yajna, na? So Indra came down and he put his index finger in the mouth of this baby. Right? And he drank from there. Yes. Yes, Prabhu.
The baby cried so much for breast milk that all the brahmanas were very unhappy. "Who will take care of this baby?" they said. Then Indra, who was worshipped in that yajna, came and solaced the baby. "Do not cry," Indra said. Then Indra put his index finger in the baby's mouth and said, "You may drink me." Because Yuvanashva, the father of the baby, was blessed by the brahmanas, he did not fall a victim to death. After this incident, he performed severe austerities and achieved perfection in that very spot.
So, similar incident happened somewhere else. You remember? Prachetas, Marisha. So, Kandu and Pramlocha. So, Kandu was a muni and he was doing austerities. Indra felt insecure. He sent a prostitute, Devata, Apsara, Pramlocha. So, she came and disturbed his thing. And then they united and they got a child. So neither the Apsara nor the Muni took responsibility of the child. So they left and the child was crying. She was Marisha, small baby girl. Then Soma, the lord of trees. So he comes and then puts his finger in the mouth of Marisha. And then she was nourished like that. Then she was brought up by trees and married to Prachetas. Okay, Yuvanashva. Now Yuvanashva attained perfection there. Then our Sukadeva Goswami continues. So this the son of this boy is Mandhata. So he is son of Yavanashva. So his activities are described in the rest of the chapter. Trasadhyasur iti indronga vidade nama yasya vai yasmatra santi hiyadvigna dasyavo ravanadaya yavanashvothamandhata chakravartyavanim prabhu saptadvipavadim eka shishasa achyuta tejasa.
Mandata, the son of Yavanashva, was the cause of fear for Ravan and other thieves and rogues who caused anxiety. O King Parikshit, because they feared him, the son of Yavanashva was known as Trasadhyasu. This name was given by King Indra. By the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the son of Yavanashva was so powerful that when he became emperor, he ruled the entire world consisting of 7 islands without any second ruler.
He was a very powerful ruler, Mandata. And then he outsmarted Ravana also. And Indra gave him the title Trasadasyu. Okay. Trasadasyu means one who threatens all the miscreants, thieves and rogues. Ijecha yagnam katubhir atmavid bhuri dakshinaihi sarvadeva mayam devam sarvatmakam atindriyam dravyam mantro vidhir yajno yajamanas tathartvija dharmo deshascha kalasya sarvam etad yadatmakam.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not different from the auspicious aspects of great sacrifices, such as the ingredients of the sacrifice, the chanting of Vedic hymns, the regulative principles, the performer, the priest, the results of the sacrifice, the arena of sacrifice, and the time of sacrifice. Knowing the principles of self-realization, Mandata worshipped that transcendentally situated Supreme Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, who comprises all the demigods. He also gave immense charity to the Brahmanas, and thus he performed yajna to worship the Lord.
So, nice verse here. So, Lord is non-different from various aspects of the sacrifice. Dravyam, ingredients. Then mantro, all the mantras chanted there. Vidhir, all the rules and regulations that are being followed. Yajna, the sacrifice. Yajamani, sacrifice as a yajaman, right? So, the conductor of the sacrifice. Then tatha ritvijaha, all the priests of the sacrifice. So all these are non-different from Lord Vishnu, right? Then this Mandata knows all this. So he very nicely performed so many sacrifices for the satisfaction of Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is sarvadevamayam devam sarvatmakam atindriyam. He is sarvadevamayam. He is consisting of all demigods, right? If you worship him, then the worship of all the demigods is included, like that. If you are offering oblations to various demigods in the sacrifice, it's that you are offering oblations to him only. He set in limb, like that. Sarva devamayam devam, sarvatmakam, he is super soul of everyone. Atindriyam, he is transcendental. Yavat surya udetisma, yavatcha pratitishthati, tatsarvam yavanashvasya mandhatu kshetramuchyate.
All places from where the sun rises on the horizon, shining brilliantly, to where the sun sets, are known as the possession of the celebrated Mandata, the son of Yavanashva.
Shashabindor duhitari bindumatyam adhan rupa purukutsam ambarisham muchukundam chayoginam. Yes. Read. Oh, two more lines. Tesham Tesham Svasara Panchasat Saubharim Vivarepatim.
Mandata begot three sons in the womb of Bindumati, the daughter of Sasabindu. These sons were Purukushta, Ambrisha and Muchukunda, a great mystic yogi. These three brothers had 50 sisters, who all accepted the great sage Saubhari as their husband.
Purukutsa, Ambarisha, Muchukunda. So this Muchukunda must be different. This Ambarisha is definitely different from the fourth chapter Ambarisha. Then Purukutsa is very much connected to snakes. Okay, in the next chapter we'll describe. So we took up this few verses which are describing the activities of Purukutsa and kept in our godown, Jeevi godown, for protection from snakes. Right? If you remember the activities of Purukutsa, then one will be freed from the fear of snakes. We'll discuss in the seventh chapter beginning. You should memorize all these verses. That will come in the beginning of seventh chapter. So this, he had three sons and one daughter. Okay, oh, no, 50 daughters. That will come in the beginning of seventh chapter. Purukutsa thing. Now Mandhata and Saubhari. Now the description of his sons will come later, but now his description of his son-in-law will come first. That is the rest of the chapter. So, Saubhari is a great sage. He became the husband of 50 daughters, all these 50 sisters. So, why one sage who is doing tapa has to marry so many wives? That is the question. Then, how come all these beautiful princes of king, great king Mandhata, who is ruling the entire planet, how could they choose an old sage as their husband? Right? So, answer to the questions is the next few verses. Yavanantarjale magnas tapamana parantapa tapyamana parantapa nirvritim mena rajasya drishtva maithuna dharminah jataspruho nrupam vipra kanyam ekam ayachatam sopyaha grihyatam brahman kamam kanya svayamvare.
Saubhari Rishi was engaged in austerity deep in the water of the river Yamuna when he saw a pair of fish engaged in sexual affairs. Thus he perceived the pleasure of sex life and induced by his desire, by this desire he went to King Mandata and begged for one of the king's daughters. In response to this request, the king said, "O Brahmana, any of my daughters may accept any husband according to their personal selection."
So, see the description of Saubhari here. Yumanantar jale magnas. He was absorbed and immersed, not only in water, in tapa also. Yamuna antarjale magnas tapyamana parantapa. He is undergoing such severe austerities within the waters of Yamuna, holy river. Then nirvritim mena rajasya. Mena rajasya means a great fish. Right? So what they are doing? Drishtva maithuna dharminaha. So maithuna dharminaha, they are engaged in sex. Mena rajasya, one great fish is engaged in sex with a female fish. Right? Oftentimes we can't even recognize who is male fish and who is female fish also. Okay, but he saw that and understood that they are mating also. Right? They are not, it's difficult to make out also, but he saw. So what happened? What is the effect? Jata spruho, spruha. Then his inclination towards engaging in sex, jata, evoked in him. Right? It came out. He became inclined towards sexual activities. Jata spruho nrupam vipra. So this, he went to Nrupam. He went to a king, Mandhata. Then kanyam ekam ayachata, give me one lady, give me one kanya, I will marry. And how he was looking, he for so many thousands of years or whatever, for a long time, so many years, he was sitting underwater. He just came out, an old sage, and asking, give me your kanya, I will marry. So what will the king say? And it's not some beggar outside the street, he is the king of the entire planet. What did he say? Sopyagra grahyatam brahman kamam kanya swayamvare. My kanya, my daughter, will do swayamvar. Swayamvar, she herself has to select the husband. Right? You can't just ask for my kanya. If she selects you, then I will get you married to her. Right? He was not at all inclined to give her daughter to, although he had 50 daughters, he was not inclined to give even one of them to Saubhari. Mandhata, he mildly rejected. But our Saubhari Muni, he was very determined, because he was affected by the vision of this, what is it, Mena Rajasya, Maithuna Dharma. So he wants to marry, right? There was nothing else in his mind. He pushed the king, Mandhata. Then, so king was confident, my daughter will not choose him. But if my daughter chooses you, then I will get you married, he said that. Then this, Saubhari, he said, okay, take me to your daughters. Okay, and the messengers, it was considered eunuchs also. They were assisting or they were guarding the queens or something like that. They came and then they took the old sage, Saubhari. On the way, Saubhari thought, if I go in this kind of get up, nobody will choose me, that is sure. Then he transformed himself, because he is a very great yogi, he had so many mystic powers. He transformed himself into a very beautiful young man who was looking like Gandharva. So he went in front of the queens, princesses. So they saw. Each girl wanted this person as husband. Right? Everyone, all 50, they started quarreling among themselves also. Right? I want him as husband. I saw him first. Whoever sees me first will get married. Whoever likes me first will get married. That was the deal. But everyone liked. And everyone is claiming that I only saw him first. Then finally, Mandhata was obliged. How could this... Actually, the messengers come and then inform Mandhata. All your 50 daughters are choosing this sage. And he was shocked. My daughters had such poor taste or what? He was looking like this in front of me. How did this happen? He went and saw, he became transformed like such beautiful young man, Gandharva. Then he was obliged. Actually, he was not willing to even allow Mandhata also to go and see the daughters also. But he was fearing the curse. He already rejected mildly. Okay, but because he asked once again, okay, I think this fellow is very adamant. So I have to fulfill his desire of seeing my daughters at least. Okay, let him hear a no from my daughters themselves. But something opposite had happened. So out of fear of curse, he allowed. But he married. Okay, we will read. So this is the story. Beginning of the story of Saubhari Muni. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Mandhata was the king of Mathura. His capital, although he was king of the entire seven seas that is mentioned in the previous verses, maybe his capital city was Mathura. He was staying in Mathura, and our Saubhari was staying in Yamuna only. Right? He just came out and went to Mathura king and then asked, I want your daughter. So when the rishi felt sexual desire, he emerged from water and went to King Mandhata to ask one of his daughters to become his wife. Savichintya priyam strinam jaratoham asanmata valipalita etakka yajatka ityaham pratyuddhadhrita. Okay. Sadhayishyetha tatmanam surastrinam abhipsitam kimpunarmanujedranam
iti vyavasita prabhu. Here he is calling him prabhu. Sukadeva Goswami is calling Saubari Muni as prabhu. Iti vyavasita prabhu. What was his plan? Sadhayishyetatmanam. Sadhayishye means I will act in such a way. What? Atha atmanam, my body. I will transform my body in such a way that surastrinam abhipsitam. Even the celestial damsels also will abhipsitam, will desire me. Okay, I will get that kind of body. Kim punar munujendranam? What to speak of humanly, ladies? They will obviously like me. Right? Iti vyavasthita prabhu. He planned like this. Right? So, vyavasthita. He was very determined in this way. It is said that if we act for Krishna, our material desires, our material skills will be transformed into spiritual skills. We can transform our material skills into spiritual assets by performing devotional service, by serving Vaishnavas. But if one commits Vaishnava Aparad, his spiritual skills, his divine skills will be transformed into material skills. He is a great yogi, right? He had such great mystic powers to transform himself into different forms or whatever. He is utilizing it purely for fulfilling his lusty desires, sense gratification only. Right? So far, he was trying to convert matter into spirit, but because of this lusty desire, because of Vaishnava Aparad towards Garuda, he is transforming his divine skills into matter, spirit into matter. So that's happening here. Sadhayishyetamatmanam. Okay, read, Prabhu. I am now feeble because of old age. My hair has become grey, my skin is slack, and my head always trembles. Head is always trembling like this. Old man, you see, he was at that point. Now he transformed. Besides, I am a yogi, therefore women do not like me. Since the king has thus rejected me, I shall transform my body in such a way as to be desirable even to celestial women, like Gandharva. What to speak of daughters of worldly kings? Munih praveshita kshatra kanyanta puram riddhimat vritasaraja kanyabhir ekam panchashata vara. Thereafter, when Saubari Muni became quite young and beautiful person, the messenger of the palace took him inside the residential quarters of the princesses, which were extremely opulent. All 50 princes then accepted him as their husband, although he was only one man. All 50 are accepting him as husband, although he was only one man. So to that extent they were influenced. Although you may like someone, if someone has already chosen him, especially when it is a marriage thing, he can't just fight. And they are not ordinary ladies. They were queens, they were princesses, daughters of great king like Mandhata. So all of them were started quarreling among themselves. To such an extent, he impressed them. That is his yogic mystic power. Okay? Someone who is like hanging skin and then he was like shivering head, skinny yogi, who was not at all attractive to anyone, any lady, he transformed himself in such a way that all 50 started quarreling amongst themselves to choose this person as husband. So that is, to that extent, our Saubari Muni impressed them thoroughly. 44. Tasam kalir abhud bhuyams tadarthe pohya sauhridam mamanurupo nayamva hijitad gata chesat chetasam. Thereafter, the princesses, being attracted by Saubari Muni, gave up their sisterly relationship. Once one is affected by lust very badly, he will lose common sense. He will give up relationships with others also. Okay, they gave up their sisterly relationship and they quarreled among themselves. Each one of them contending, this man is just suitable for me. No, they didn't stop there. He is not suitable for you. They said that also. Right? In this way, there ensued a great disagreement.
Right? Tadgata chetasam. Tadgata chetasam.
Their chetasa, their chetana is totally captivated by Saubhari Muni.
Right? Then, tadarthe apohya sauhridam.
They gave up their sauhridam. They gave up their friendly relationships of being sisters or whatever.
Mamanu rupo nayamva.
Okay, he is fit for me, not for you. Like that. Then, basically, sense gratificatory desire will only lead to quarreling. Selfish sense gratificatory desires will lead to quarreling only, nothing else. Like that.
Now, Sabahav, and see the mystic power.
Because now he came, Saubhari Muni came to marry only one girl. At his point, like when he came out of Yamuna or whatever, when he saw the fish, he wanted to marry one girl, right? One wife only. But now seeing 50 people, right? 50 people wanting him, he married all 50. And he became 50. And then he produced 5,000. Produced 100 out of each of them. Right? So one person, one yogi, who was sitting alone and doing some tapasya, he became 5,000 in within short time. Right? First he became 50 and he became 5,000 later. It's all because of Vaishnava Prath. So these two themes are very prominent in the entire ninth canto, lust and Vaishnava Prath. So lust and Vaishnava Prath are the prominent themes of ninth canto. We will read them in various episodes. First, in the ninth canto, beginning chapters, Ambarish Maharaj Durvasa, that is purely Vaishnava Prath. And later parts, Pururava Urvasi, then Devayani and Yayati, that is also lust. But this episode is related to both lust and Vaishnava Prath. Two things. Here, Vaishnava Prath is leading to lust. Right? Vaishnava Prath has become the cause of his degradation, to his falling down to lusty desires. So that is emphasized in this. So this has both themes together.
Sabhavrijahtabhir aparaniya tapasriyangras tapasriyanargya parichadeshu griheshunanopavanamalambhi sarasu saugandhika kananeshu maharhasaya sanavastra bhushana snananulepa bhyavaroh bhyavahara malakaihi svalankrita stri purusheshu nityada remenugaya dvijabhagna dvijabhrunga vandishu.
Because Saubhari Muni was expert in chanting mantras perfectly.
Bahavricha. Bahavricha means expert in chanting mantras. Okay? Yeah.
His severe austerities resulted in an opulent home with garments, ornaments, properly dressed and decorated maid servants and man servants, and varieties of parks with clear water lakes and gardens. In the gardens, fragrant with varieties of lakes, fragrant with varieties of flowers, birds chirped and bees hummed, surrounded by professional singers. Saubhari Muni's home was amply provided with valuable beds, seats, ornaments and arrangements for bathing, and there were varieties of sandalwood creams, flower garlands and palatable dishes. Thus surrounded by opulent paraphernalia, the Muni engaged in family affairs with his numerous wives.
So here, Saubhari Muni, with his mystic powers, he created 50 palaces for these 50 queens. okay, all the 50 daughters of Mandhata. So he created 50 palaces, and it's not just one room, like 50 rooms there. We have one room and attached a toilet, that's all, nothing more, not like that. 50 big palaces, mansions, right, with lakes, parks, beds, furniture, everything. Everything was amply provided with valuable beds, seats, ornaments, arranges for bathing. Okay, and there were varieties of sandalwood creams, flower garlands. Arrangements for bathing is not just one toilet room. There could be so many sarovars there, right, connected to each palace. So now he is Bahavrucha, expert in chanting mantras, right? He had a lot of mystic powers, and he transformed himself into a young man, and he created so many palatial buildings. Now something similar also happened in one of the previous cantos. What is that? Kardambani. He also created. But when he created, everyone glorified it. Right? Kardambani's household life was glorified by even demigods. He's an ideal husband. He satisfied his wife so nicely. And his wife, Devahuti, she was an ideal wife. She was an ideal lady. She got protection of mother, protection of father when she was before marriage. Then she got protection of husband when she was married. Then she got protection of son when husband left. Husband went to take renunciation. So she was an ideal woman. And this pair, Kardambani and Devahuti, their family life, their household life was very much glorified by even great denizens of heaven. Apparently it seems that both are doing similar activities. Kardambani also created a great mansion to fulfill the desires of his wife. They were also engaged in sexual activities. Right? Kardambani transformed himself into 9 to satisfy the desires of Devahuti. Right? But at the end, he was glorified, and Saubari's act was not very much glorified. Right? The lessons or the realizations of Saubarimuni were glorified, but his act was not glorified. Why? Because the obvious reasons are, you are entitled, you are approved to do some activity. Engaging in sex life means that is meant for a householder, not for a renounced person. So renounced person is Saubarimuni. And then he came out of that renounced order and then fell down to sexual desires. But Kardambani, it was his duty to engage in sex. It was his duty to give pleasure to Devahuti and then give her children. Right? The activity in itself is not wrong, but the activity, who is doing that? Is he the right person to do it? Who does what? That is an important thing. Then also that Kardambani, he never had a track record of Vaishnavapara or anything like that. He had a controlled desire. Right? He wanted to fulfill the desire for son, okay, of his wife. Right? And he was in control. As soon as she became pregnant and she became mother, he was ready to leave. He was not attached to all of them. Now, coming under the influence of mode of passion is different from engaging mode of passion in certain activity. Right? Kardambani had mystic powers. He utilized those mystic powers to fulfill the desire of his wife, which is bona fide. So Kardambani utilized his powers, right, to fulfill the desires of his wife. But here, Saubarimuni, he came under the influence of his own desires and then utilized his powers to fulfill his own sense gratificated desires. Here, his own sense gratificated desire is pulling him. Right? He's pulling him to engage his powers in certain activities. Right? There, he was doing just his duty. Like that. You're getting, right? Controlled anger, see, coming, engaging anger to correct someone, that is at one level. Then coming under the influence of anger and committing aparadha to someone, that's on a different level. Both may seem to be anger. Here both may seem to be lust. But he is engaging his lust to fulfill
the duty of a householder and to fulfill the desire of his wife, who was having a bona fide desire. But here he is coming under the influence of that activity, influence of that emotion, lust, and then misusing all his powers. We understood the difference? So, where were we? He was expert in chanting mantras. Prabhupada makes a nice statement. By chanting mantras, Obari Muni arranged for material opulence, but this was not perfection in life. As will be seen, Saubari Muni will be dissatisfied with material opulence and thus left everything and re-entered the forest in the Vanaprastha order and achieved final success. So after the whole thing, Kardam Muni also created a mansion, flying mansion. At least there is no mention that Saubari's mansions are flying. But Kardam Muni created a flying, whole city only. So there was no guilt in Kardam Muni. I have done something wrong. After the whole activity, actually Devahuti felt guilt. I didn't utilize your association properly. She felt like that. But Kardam Muni, because he was doing everything under control, he had a controlled way of operating. He is not controlled by some lust or something else. Right? He knows what he is doing. He is aware. He is conscious. Right? He is not being totally pulled by his anarthas. Right? So Kardam Muni was not feeling anything like that, right? After the whole thing, he said, "Arey, what did I do?" But here, it's proved that Saubari Muni, what he had done was wrong. Because he himself feels that after some time. Right? When the internal urge is so much, one cannot realize. Even if he realizes that I am doing some mistake, still the urge inside is pulling him so much that he just gives in into it. Right, it happens many times. So, Prabhupada says, those who are not Atmatattvavit, who do not know the spiritual value of life, can be satisfied with external material opulences. But Atmatattvavit are not inspired by material opulence. Right? So, this is the instruction we can derive from the life and activities of Saubari Muni. So Saubari Muni, although he committed this whatever mistake, still he's like our hero. So we can learn a lot from him. He is teaching us this lesson. This instruction we can derive from Saubari Muni's life. He can create so much material opulence. He did that. He transformed himself into a young man. He created so much of material facilities for sense gratification. But after a while, he realized that all this is nonsense. I have to be detached from it. Because he knows what is the value of life. He was not absorbed in the sense gratification for the rest of eternity. It was a small phase in his life. It was actually a reaction for his Vaishnava aparadha. That we will come. That is the main thing. Right? So he is Atmatattvavit. Okay, now we'll go ahead. Yadgarhastyam tu samvikshya saptadvipavadipati vismitastambham ajahat sarvabhomastriyanvitam. Now see this. Mandata felt very inferior. I am the king of the whole planet and this fellow is enjoying so much. Seeing his enjoyment, he felt ashamed. I can't enjoy like this. Right? So Mandhata, the king of the entire world, consisting of 7 islands, was struck with wonder when he saw the household opulence of Saubari Muni. Thus he gave up his false prestige. Someone outsmarted him so thoroughly, he completely humbled him and humiliated him. Right? Humiliated the emperor of the entire world. To that extent Saubari Muni was enjoying. Right? He gave his position as emperor in this world only. What is the meaning of me being an emperor? Let me be detached. Like that. Everyone is proud of his own position. But here is an astounding experience in which the emperor of the entire world felt himself defeated in all details of material happiness by the opulence of Saubari Muni. So material opulence means
it cannot give you satisfaction. Simple. Material opulence cannot give you satisfaction. So however you may have, someone will come and outsmart you. Right? Some yogi will come and outsmart you. Right? In a most unassuming way. And then you have to give, what I am enjoying, he is enjoying much more. Okay. 11:30, we'll take a break. Anandini Babu. Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, Radhesham Prabhu, may I request you to please share something on this topic? Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, all of us are hearing you. Could you please share some things on this topic, Prabhu? Saubariman. Okay, Prabhu. Now we are taking a break. Okay, Prabhu. After break is okay or after the end of the session?
After the public after the end, I will
speak. Okay, Prabhu. Okay, Prabhu. Thank you, Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Evam griheshvabhirato vishayan vividhai sukhaihi sevamanona chatushyad ajyastokair ivanalah.
In this way, Saubari Muni enjoyed sense gratification in the material world, but he was not at all satisfied, just as a fire never ceases blazing if constantly supplied with drops of fat.
Fire is never ceases if it is supplied with drops of fat. It's a nice analogy. Somewhere in 11th canto or somewhere 7th canto I think this comes. If you put more ghee, you just put 1 kilo of ghee on the fire will extinguish only. Similarly, getting so much involved, like too deep involvement in sense gratificated desires, you will give up the urge for sense gratification only. After the chapter. So that is one thing. But Bhagavatam also says that is recommended for very lowly people. You engage some, you smoke 1,000 cigarettes in one day so that you will give up smoking only. Okay.
you eat, you know, 100 gulab jamuns or, you know, 200 gulab jamuns in a day, that you will give up sweets only. So something like that, something of that sort. But it's not a very good solution. But here, very carefully, it's mentioned here, fire never ceases blazing if constantly supplied with drops of fat. Little sense gratification every now and then you will get. You will continue to enjoy senses like that. So constant supply with drops of it. I am just thinking a positive understanding can be taken from this. Familiarity breeds contempt. Right? If you are too much in contact with something very extraordinary or great, you will tend to take it cheaply. But once in a while, you just come in contact with that, you will always anticipate, okay, when will I come in contact with this object next time? So then, if there is some gaps, proper gaps, that will increase your anticipation and separation, you will still continue to value that object. Right? Otherwise, if you are constantly dealing with it only, familiarity will breed contempt. So in a positive way of understanding, we can take from this. But here, his sense gratificatory desires were not at all satisfied by constantly engaging. Even in 6th canto also, when Daksha was chastising Narada Muni for converting his children, Hariyashvas and Shavalashvas, into renunciants, Daksha gives a logic. They did not engage in sense gratification only. They did not do any karma only. How will they be detached? The qualification for renunciation is to be disgusted with material enjoyment. They did not enjoy only. Material enjoyment they didn't experience only. How will they be detached? So materialists will think that renunciation will come after sense gratification. First you have to do sense gratification. Then you will be qualified for renunciation. That is not the case. Prabhupada defeats Daksha's logic with a simple example. A woman will become pregnant, and then when she is giving birth to a child, she will think, "Arey, is such so painful that giving birth to a child is so painful that I will not give birth to a child anymore. Means I will not engage in sex life anymore." She will think like that. But after giving birth to a child, after some time, she will again engage in sex life. And again she will become pregnant. Again she will undergo the labor pains. Right? So, intelligent way is to hear and understand. Prabhupada writes in NOI. NOI, right? NOI only. Thief. Thief analogy. That will come in NOI only. First few verses. Atyahara prayasascha prajalpo niyamagraha. There Prabhupada writes, somebody will hear that one will be arrested if he commits theft. Right? Then he will restrain from stealing. But low-grade people are, even if they experience theft and they will be imprisoned also, still they will continue to steal. But intelligent people means they will hear about the effects and then they will restrain from doing that forbidden act. So like that. Now material desire is just like blazing fire. If a fire is continuously supplied with drops of fat, the fire will increase more and more and never be extinguished. Therefore, the policy of trying to satisfy material desires by catering to one's material demands will never be successful. By catering to the demands of one's senses, one will not be able to satisfy the material desires. One should forcefully stop. Okay? Like that. Prabhupada gives the example of economic development. Economic development means constantly supplying drops of fat in the fire. Right? And still, even after constantly supplying drops of fat also, one day they will be satisfied? No. The result is dissatisfaction only. But real satisfaction is Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the real satisfaction. So, there, Krishna consciousness involves the practice of hearing and chanting while restraining senses from sense objects.
That is also included there. Right? If you have to think of Krishna, you have to stop thinking of Maya. That is also involved there. If you have to engage senses in Krishna's service, one has to stop engaging senses in Maya's service. That is implied there. So, sense control, in a crude way, sense control is a key for satisfaction. But in the more complete way, Krishna consciousness is the key for satisfaction. As Prabhupada says, real satisfaction is Krishna consciousness. But Krishna consciousness involves restraining from Maya also, restraining from sense gratification also. Bhoktaram yagna tapasam sarvaloka maheswaram suhrudam sarvabhutanam gnatvamam shanti mruchyati. Bhoktaram yagna tapasam. Understand that Krishna is the enjoyer of everything. I am not the enjoyer. If I am not the enjoyer, what is the use of this pursuit of sense enjoyment? Anyways, I am not the enjoyer. I am only getting entangled. I am feeling that I am enjoying, right? I am under the illusion that I am enjoying my senses, but actually I am getting entangled in the process of sense gratification. That is a fact. But foolish conditioned souls will think that I am enjoying. But actual enjoyer is Krishna. Bhoktaram yagna tapasam. Then he is Sarvaloka Maheswaram. He is the proprietor of everything. He is the proprietor of entire cosmic manifestation. But conditioned soul will think that I am proprietor of something. At least something. Like that. Suhurdam sarvabhutanam gnatvamam shanti mruchyati. One will come out of the material miseries and then attain peace only if he understands Krishna as enjoyer, as proprietor and as well-wisher of everyone. Like that. So one must therefore take to Krishna consciousness and advance in Krishna consciousness by properly following the regulative principles. Then one can attain an eternal, blissful life in peace and knowledge. Sakadachit upasina atma apahvanam atmanah dadarshabhavrichacharyo Meena Sangha Samuthitam.
Thereafter, one day while Saubarya Muni, who was expert in chanting mantras, was sitting in a secluded place, he thought to himself about the cause of his fall down, which was simply that he had associated himself with the sexual affairs of the fish.
One day he started reflecting. He was sitting alone somewhere in a secluded place. Then he started reflecting. So, solution to the problem many times could begin with a honest contemplation or reflecting what went wrong, what happened. Right? That also one of the solutions, you can say. So, he started reflecting. Why did I end up here? I was in Yamuna. I ended up in this bungalow. What happened? I was alone. I ended up in the midst of 50 wives and 5,000 children. What happened? So he started thinking like that. So Saubarya Muni unnecessarily gave the fish shelter under him. Here Prabhupada mentions. He quotes Chakravartipad. Saubarya Muni had fallen from his austerity because of Vaishnava Parad. Vaishnava Parad could make one fall down for the most insignificant cause also. Right, Saubarya Muni's fall down from his position of being a great sage was not caused by something very great. Indra did not send any apsaras. Right, Tilottama, Rambha, Urvasi, they never came down. Just two fish were sufficient. Just some insignificant fish. Right, you can't make out what they are doing. You will only be observed, oh, so cute, oh, so sweet. You will only say like that. Seeing an aquarium, you can't understand what they are doing there. So Saubarya Muni fell down to that, such an insignificant thing, only because of Vaishnava Parad. The history is that when Garuda wanted to eat fish, Saubarya Muni unnecessarily gave the fish shelter under his care. Unnecessarily gave. Giving shelter to someone may be glorious, right? But when a Vaishnava wants to punish him or whatever, to utilize him in certain way, you can't just obstruct his enjoyment. Because Garuda's plans for eating were disappointed, Saubari Muni certainly committed a great offense to a Vaishnava. Because of this Vaishnava Aparad, an offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, Saubari Muni fell from his exalted position of mystic tapasya. One should not therefore impede the activities of a Vaishnava. One cannot impede the activities of Vaishnavas. Those who are obstructing the Sankirtan movement or spreading of preaching by out of sheer envy, so we can understand what's going to happen to them. Right? One cannot impede the activities of a Vaishnava. If such a great yogi who is performing austerities in the holy Yamuna, he could fall down in such a silly way, what to speak of someone who deliberately does something to a Vaishnava? Right? Vaishnava Prat. This is the lesson we must learn from this incident concerning Saubari Muni. Prabhupada gave another lesson. 46th purport he gave one about Atma Tattva Vit. And here he is speaking one more lesson. One cannot impede the activities of a Vaishnava. Here we can recollect what Madhuri Kadambini says about Vaishnava Aparad. Yesterday I was going through that notes. I read this 1 year back. I have made a PowerPoint for Garang Prabhu. So Madhuri Kadambini discusses various stages of bhakti. Right? Atho Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti. So Chakravarti Pad, the author of Madhuri Kadambini, he comes to this point of Anartha Nivritti. And then he says, definition of anartha means it has no use. Anartha means something that you do which has no use to attain Krishna and his service. That is anartha. Right? Performing some useless activity, right, that will not qualify you to enter Krishna's service. It opposes, anartha opposes paramartha, and it's an obstacle in attaining paramartha. So there are four types of anarthas. Dushkrutottha anartha, Sukrutottha anartha, Aparadottha anartha. Right? These are the first three. So Dushkrutottha anartha means if someone commits some papa, some sinful activities, so the anarthas that one develops because of those sin, because of that papa, they are called Dushkrutottha anarthas. Then Sukrutottha anarthas will arise from desire for temporary pleasure, for svarga, etc. So now last one, this important one, which is relevant for the current context, is aparathotta anartha. It is arising out of offenses. Gaurang Prabhu often gives this example that papa or sin is dhuli lepa. You just draw some line on some dhuli, in some sand. You go to the beach and then you just draw a line. That will stay for a while. Okay? And as time progresses, within short time, maybe half an hour or 1 hour, whatever, it just mixes with again normally. But Vajralepa, you do it with a thunderbolt on a stone. Vajralepa. You just draw a line on the stone. It will stay forever. Right? So that is like aparadha. So the effects of aparadha are very severe compared to sin. So when someone commits a sin with his body, mind or words or under the influence of false ego, like it could affect the body and mind. Effects are related to the body and mind. But offense means it seriously affects the soul. Offenses are different types that we will enter now later. So now one of the offenses is Sravan, Kirtan. They are all very transcendental. Krishna, devotee, Krishna's name, Krishna's dham, they are all very transcendental. But if one considers them ordinary, if he disrespects them or if he neglects them, then that is offense. What he committed, or Saubari committed, is Vaishnava Aparadha. He considered a devotee of Krishna to be ordinary or he, career of Lord Vishnu to be a person who is entitled for punishment by him. I can correct him. He felt like that. How can you eat fish? You cannot eat fish. I am protecting this fish. He said like that. Means, I mean, he never considered his position inferior to that person. If he considers himself inferior to a superior Vaishnava like Garuda, he would not have corrected him or instructed him or cursed him or whatever. But he did that. So he minimized the position of a Vaishnava, that is a Vaishnava aparad. So considering a Vaishnava or any name of the Lord or dham of the Lord or seven kirtan of the Lord to be ordinary is an offense. Right? So aparadha to an ashraya means a devotee is graver compared to aparadha to a vishaya, means bhogi. Ashraya means devotee, vishaya means bhogi. There are other definitions also in some other contexts. But here, if you offend a materialistic person, it's not that serious. But if you offend a practicing devotee, then it is serious. Like that. So what? It results in the disappearance of bhakti or drying up the root of bhakti. Okay, now Radha means satisfaction. Aparadha means diminishing satisfaction. So one may do so many activities, but if there is a trace of Vaishnava aparadha, then he will not derive any satisfaction from them. Right? So Krishna will just take away that satisfaction element. So favorable things for attaining the Lord are bhakti, bhakta and Lord's mercy. But grave obstacles for attaining the Lord are four things. Anva. Anva. This is the acronym. Anadara, Ashraddha, Upeksha, then Ninda. Right? Now, anadar means disrespecting. Then Ashraddha means faithlessness. Upeksha means negligence. Ninda means blasphemy. So these four are great obstacles in attaining the Lord. So Ninda here is the context. Contextually, Ninda, we are related to Ninda. Ninda, here Vaishnava Ninda is a Vaishnava aparad, and that will lead to disruption in our progress of bhakti. So there is this Madhuri Kadamani notes has many things. I am just taking some important things which are very much relevant to the context and presenting. Okay, now the main topic comes, that is blaspheming sadhus. That is the first offense to holy name. Right? It is a very grave offense to the holy name. Now, there is a popular misconception that if a sadhu commits a forbidden act, right, which he is not supposed to commit, it's not an offense to criticize them, since it is just stating the fact. Right? It's not an offense to criticize a person who commits some mistake. Right? But that is a misconception. So Sridhar Swami says, Nindanam dosha kirtanam. Right? If you enumerate the faults of somebody, right, then that is Nindanam only. That is considered Ninda only. So whether it is true or not, even if it is true, whether it is true or not, narrating the faults of a sadhu is included in blasphemy only. And how to rectify them? No, but there is a need to rectify them. If someone commits a mistake, one has to rectify them. But who should rectify them? Not a co-sadhaka. Chakravarti Bhat says, only spiritually powerful personalities like guru are guardians of devotees, right? Someone who is in charge of the devotees, they can rectify them, not a sadhaka devotee. So rectifying another sadhaka who is not doing things properly is not the duty of his co-sadhaka. It has to be done by his superiors. Right? Although he is doing some mistake, blaspheming him or criticizing him or just speaking about his faults is considered an offense only. Unless you are in a position of his guru. Like that. So what is the gravity? Chakravarti Bhat says, only thing attained by blasphemy is sin. Right? That is the only thing that is attained. Thus, one should not blaspheme devotees, great devotees. Then Krishna very easily delivers those who chant even once the name of Krishna without blaspheming anyone. If someone doesn't blaspheme anyone, he never has done any blasphemous words towards another Vaishnava. If he chants even once, Krishna will deliver him. So Krishna is not delivering someone who is not, he is chanting, means because he has some track record of some Vaishnava aparad. So what does Ninda include? Killing a devotee, blaspheming a devotee, hating or not greeting him, welcoming, okay, or not even, not glad to see him. If you do that, then that's an offense, like that. Or hating him, speaking ill of them, distrust, disrespect, envious, enmity, all of them are included in Vaishnava aparad. So sadhaka has to be very careful to protect himself from this aparad. So what is the solution to aparad? First, it starts from the heart. Deep repentance. Right? One has to burn in the fire of repentance. Then he will be purified in that fire. And self-reproach. I am such a sinful fellow. And I am offending Mahats, great devotees. That he should feel like that. Then, next step, he should go and beg forgiveness from that devotee. And please that devotee. Please that sadhu. Now, here, fire can cure fire burns. That example is given. So similarly, if a person is repentant at heart, if he is burning himself in the fire of repentance, then he will be purified. He can nullify his offense. But if and he can go and ask forgiveness from the devotee also. But if the saint is not getting pleased, now kuch aparad ho gaya. Now you go, Prabhu, I'm sorry, Prabhu, I didn't mean to do that, I'm sorry, please forgive me. You just beg forgiveness from him, you will plead in front of him. Still he is not getting pleased. Right? Still he doesn't approve what you have done. Right? He doesn't forgive you for what you have done. Then the solution is, then the course of action is, one has to openly or secretly engage in an activity to please that sadhu. Do some service or do something which he likes. You do it openly or do it secretly. Okay? Then, after so many days, he could forgive. Still, even if he doesn't forgive, even after doing that also, one has to lament, 100 curses on me, I couldn't please him. Okay? I will fall in millions of hell. Like that, like deep repentance. That's all is mentioned. Now, who is a sadhu? Kripalur akrita dosha atidikshava sarvadehinam satya saro anavadhyatma. These are the sadhus, qualities of sadhu, right? But this person, he is not having any of these qualities. Offending him, how can, if you say something to him, how can that be an offense? One may say like that. He is not a sadhu. He is not exhibiting the qualities of sadhu. So, my blaspheming him is not an offense. One may think like that. No. Answer is no. Sadhu, now your logic could be, it's offensive to blaspheme sadhus having all these qualities, not others. So sadhus who get angry on insignificant causes and can hardly get pleased with the offender do not have these qualities. So it's not offensive to blaspheme them. One may feel like that. But who is a sadhu? Apiche sudracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak. So ananya bhak, Chakravarti catches that word. Ananya bhakti means solely devoted to Krishna. So what are the symptoms of that ananya bhakti? They worship Krishna only, exclusively, no one else. Then they perform bhakti without karma and jnana. Then no desire in heart than desire to attain Krishna. No desire to attain sovereignty or material enjoyment. Right? So with this appearance of ananya bhakti, and one automatically becomes disinterested in desires other than Krishna. So such a person, if he accidentally, due to his bad upbringing, if he adopts to durachara, bad behavior, or suduracharya, means violence or theft or adultery, so still he should be considered sadhu. Blaspheming such a person is also an offense. Even if he does some apparently bad activities because of his old conditionings, still he has to be considered sadhu and
one has to restrain from criticizing him, then he can safeguard himself in his devotional service. So these are all serious effects of Vaishnava Parad. Then one more point. Even if the sadhu forgives you for his offense, for the offense that we have committed, the dust of his lotus feet will not forgive us. Where is the reference for this? Fourth canto. Sati says, Sati tells Daksha, even if the sadhu forgives you, his dust, the dust of his lotus feet will not forgive you. That is the power of the dust of lotus feet. Like that. So there are other offenses. So these are the dangerous effects of Vaishnava Parad. But some things are unavoidable. One may have to do certain things of correcting others or whatever. But one should be careful not to have any offensive attitude or negative feelings towards someone. Right? One should not have offensive attitude towards devotees inside. Externally, he may have to correct others. You are doing backup with him and he is doing something wrong. It's an offense, I cannot correct him. Backup will become goof up. Right? You can't serve the deities properly. Right? You can do it, but in a proper way. Not in a disrespectful way, or, minimizing his position, not like that. You can just give him whatever correction is needed and then continue with your service, not harboring any negative feelings in front of him. Right? Offense is, stepping on the shadow of a devotee is also an offense. Right? I mean, if you just go on like that, you can't do parikrama around Tulsi Maharani only. Right? When you are doing parikrama around Tulsi Maharani in Tulsi Puja, Tulsi Aarti in the morning, you have to step on the shadows of so many devotees. Right? So that is also an offense. So, say, offenses, there are so many offenses like that, but very serious thing is to harbor very strong negative feelings about a Vaishnava and having a disrespectful and offensive negative attitude in the mind and trying to politically pull him down from his position, because you can't get up to his position out of envy. He's just trying to pull down his position. These are like very serious offenses like that. So suppose somebody, he didn't have a document and you have to edit, and there are so many spelling mistakes. Will you not correct them? Are correcting spelling mistakes in your editing of some document made by someone, is that an offense? Okay, if you don't write a verse, okay, I don't give marks, right? I give you only 45 out of 50 because you have not written one verse. Is that offense? So something like that. So one has to be practical also, and at the same time, one has to internally take care of his consciousness, not to harbor any negative feelings towards Vaishnavas. Now here we see, Saubari Muni committed a Vaishnava Parad, and how much he fell down. His lust. So now, main topic here is not lust here. Main topic is Vaishnava Parad. His Vaishnava Parad is the root cause of his lust. Lust is a byproduct of his Vaishnava Parad. Here, this Vaishnava Parad is the main theme here. One should not therefore impede the activities of a Vaishnava. Okay. Aho imam pasyatame vinasham tapasvinas sacharitas vratasya antarjale varichara prasangat Prachyavitam Brahma Chiram Dhritam Yat.
Alas, while practicing austerity, even within the depths of the water, and while observing all the rules and regulations practiced by saintly persons, I lost the reserves of my long austerities simply by association with the sexual affairs of fish. Everyone should observe this fall down and learn from it.
Here, Saubari Muni himself is giving lesson, not Prabhupada. You take lesson from my behavior. I was practicing austerity within the depths of the water. Right? It's an unreachable place. Okay, which billboard can reach there? Which internet site can reach there? Right? Which apsara can go there? Nothing happened. Only fish.
Within the water also one can fall down. Like that. So by the association of with the sexual desires of a fish. Now two main reasons for this person, this Saubari Muni is fall down. Right? Fall down is lust there. Because lust is not the cause of fall down. Right? Lust has become the byproduct of you know his other offenses. So Vaishnava Parad. Second is lack of Vaishnava Sangha. If there is some other Vaishnava standing next to Saubari Muni, he would definitely say, "Hari, you are corrupting Garuda. You are impeding his activities. He is carrier of Vishnu. Please relax. Don't do that." He could have said that. But he lacked that Vaishnava Sangha. He got Matsya Sangha. You know, fish ka association. Not Vaishnava's association. That 51st verse is very important. So, learn a lesson. What is the lesson? He is saying in 51st verse. Sangam tyajeta mithuna vratinam mumukshu sarvatmanana visrujet bahirindriyani ekascharan rahasi chittamananta ishe yunjita tad vratishu sadhushu chet prasanga Sangam tyajeta mithuna vratinam mumukshu sarvatmanana visrujet bahirindriyani ekascharan rahasi chittamananta ishe yunjita tadvratishu sadhushu chet prasanga.
A person desiring liberation from material bondage must give up the association of persons interested in sex life and should not employ his senses externally in seeing, hearing, talking, walking and so on. One should always stay in a secluded place, completely fixing his mind on at the lotus feet of the unlimited personality of Godhead. And if one wants any association at all, he should associate with persons similarly engaged.
Sangam tyajeta mithuna vratinam mukshu. Mumukshu means if you are desiring liberation, if you are a mumukshu. Mumukshu means like, you can't take it in a negative connotation that we may have, but if at all if you desire liberation from this material existence, okay, or you can say if you want to go back to Godhead in this context. Sangam tyajeta mithunavratinam. You have to give up the association of mithunavratinam. Mithunavratinam means one who is addicted to sense gratification. Sex life. Mithuna Vrati. Right? There is Graha Vrati, Mithuna Vrati. Then Sarvatmanane. Sarvatmana na visrujet bahirindriyani. So in all respect, Sarvatmana, one should not employ his bahirindriyani, external senses in that activities. Right? Ekascharan rahasi chittam ananta ishe yunjita. Ekascharan. Live in a secluded place. Live alone. I mean, he is not speaking in Kali Yuga. He says, you should live alone. And rahasi chittam ananta ishe. Ekascharan rahasi. You live in a secluded place alone. And chittam ananta ishe yunjita. Absorb your consciousness in the unlimited supreme personality of Godhead, Krishna. Tad vratishu sadhushu chet prasanga. If at all you want prasanga, association, first option he gave is be alone, focus on Krishna. Second option is if you can't do that, prasanga, take association of tadvratishu, sadhushu. Take association of sadhus who are tadvratishu, who are very dedicated to Krishna. Like that. If at all one needs association, he should associate with similar person similarly engaged. Like that. So these are the conclusion derived from his practical experience. So for us, Kali Yuga people, first option is association. Right? Association is the key for advancement. I mean, favorable association, devotee association, not any association. Like that. And one has to give up the, Mithunavratishu. Mithunavratinam. Mahatsevam dvaramahur vimukte. What is that next line? Tamo dvaram. tamodvaram yoshitam sanghi sangam. If one associates with womanizers, then tamodvaram, doors to hell are open, royal road to hell is association with sense gratifiers. So mahat sevam means dvaram ahur vimuktes. Nishkinchanasya bhagavan bhajonmukasya paramparam jigmishor bhavasagarasya santarshanam vishayan atha yoshitam cha ha hanta hanta vishabhakshanato api asadhu. So here Prabhupada quotes a very relevant verse that nishkinchanasya bhagavan bhajanonmukhasya, if someone is eager to engage in devotional service, bhagavan bhajanonmukhasya, he is having inclination towards bhajan of Bhagavan, such a person who is seriously desiring to cross this material ocean, paramparam jigimishor bhavasagarasya, you want to cross over this material ocean and engage in transcendental loving service of the Lord, then there are two important things that you need to take care. That is, sandarshanam vishayinam. Sandarshanam vishayinam means you cannot even see. Darshan bilenane. You can't even take darshan of vishayi, a materialist, engaged in sense gratification. And atha yoshitam cha. And also woman who is similarly interested. Right? Materialistic person, then woman. These two one has to avoid. Right? And hahanta hanta vishabhakshanopi asadhu, that is more dangerous. Association with materialistic people and women is more dangerous than poison. Okay, that's what this verse says. And materialists are avoided. Why? Because every materialist is interested in sex only. Right? So his association must be avoided. Tandera charana seva bhakta sanevas. Whenever association of devotees is emphasized, Prabhupada often quotes this verse. Tandera charana sevi bhakta sanevas. One must live in the association of devotees. Then he will automatically become uninterested in material affairs. Because all devotees are interested in devotional service only. Okay? Jaisa sang vaisa rang. We say right? Sangat sanjayate kama. Depending on your sangha, your inclinations and desires also will develop. That's a Prabhupada says, ISKCON, we are establishing so many temples so that people can come and associate with the devotees in the temple and go back to Godhead. So bad association, even in the deepest part of water. Here Saubari Muni regrets that he had bad association even in the deepest parts of the water. So a secluded place is also not secure. Saubari Muni's example is proving secluded place, focus on Krishna, he said that. But in secluded place also, it's not secure. Right? Better is association of devotees. Then, ekastapasvaham atham basi matsya sangat panchashadasam utapancha sahasra sarga nantam vrajami ubhayo krita manorathanam. Nantam vrajami ubhayo krita manorathanam. Maya gunair hritamatir vishayertha bhava. In the beginning I was alone and engaging in performing austerities of mystic yoga. But later, because of the association of fish engaged in sex, matsya sangat, what happened? I desired to marry. Then I became the husband of 50 wives. And in each of them I begot 100 sons. And thus my family increased to 5,000 members. By the influence of the modes of material nature, I became fallen and thought that I would be happy in material life. Thus, there is no end to my material desires for enjoyment in this life and the next. Okay. So like that, because once one thought comes in mind, it doesn't stop there. It will multiply. It will give birth to so many other thoughts, so many other connected thoughts, disconnected thoughts, distracting thoughts, so many things, it will be, one will be caught in the loop. One person became 5,000. I mean, he didn't mention about the marriages of all these 5,000 members, right, their children. It will become 50,000, 5 lakhs, like that. It will just spread only. Dynasty, Saubari Muni dynasty. So, evam vasan grihe kalam virakto anyasam asthita vanam jagama nuyayas tatpatnyah patidevatah. In this way he passed his life in household affairs for some time, but then he became detached from material enjoyment. To renounce material association, he accepted vanaprastha and went to forest. His devoted wives also followed him, for they had no shelter other than their husband. So wives also followed him. Tatra tattva tapas tikshnam atma darshanam atmavan sahaiva agnibhir atmanam yoja paramatmani. When Saubari Muni was, who was quite conversant with the self, tatra tapasva tapas tikshnam atma darshanam atmavan, right, he performed severe penances. In this way, in the fire of time of death, he ultimately engaged himself in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? Yoja paramatmani. So at the time of death, fire burns the gross body. And if there are no material desires, then subtle body is also ended there. Now at the end of the life, only gross body is being burnt, not the subtle body. Subtle body, when it will be burnt? When there are no material desires, then the soul will be released out of subtle body also. So soul is covered by subtle body and gross body. So gross body keeps on changing, but subtle body also keeps on changing because of material desires. But subtle body carries you to another gross body. We hear this elaborately in where? Heshru, Amriteshru. Puranjan session, correct. Fourth canto, ending. Fourth canto, 29th chapter. Narada Muni gives an elaborate description on transmigration of soul. Okay, this is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. When the pure soul remains, if he is coming out of the entanglement of subtle body and gross body both, then yad gatva nivartante tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti. Last verse. Tasvapatyur Maharaja Nirikshyadhyatmikim Gatim Anviyustat Prabhavena Agnim Shantam Ivarchisha. So by observing their husband progressing in spiritual existence, Saubari Muni's wives are also able to enter the spiritual world by his spiritual power. Just as the flames of fire cease when the fire is extinguished. So fire is like husband. Flames of fire are like wives. So when a wife has a very powerful, spiritually inclined husband, but by dint of his power, spiritual power, wife also will be liberated. That is mentioned here. That's a faithful following of a devotee husband is very crucial for the spiritual advancement of woman. Right? If a woman is fortunate enough to get a suitable husband who is spiritually advanced, and if she always engages in service, his service, she also gets the same benefit as her husband. Like that. So, although they were unfit, because they are faithful followers of their husband, they also entered the spiritual world with him. Although the disciple may be unfit, but if he faithfully follows the instructions of spiritual master, right, and serves the spiritual master, he can also go back to Godhead, like that, like the spiritual master, like that. So these are few points for discussion in the sixth chapter. Now, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, would you like to speak to me? What is this? Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna,
yeah.
Prabhuji.
Yeah.
Yes, Prabhuji. Yeah.
If I speak, it will be clear.
Yes, Prabhu. It's clear, Prabhu.
Okay, Prabhu. So, in the Saubari Muni's pastime, we learn how a Jira becomes a Muda. Actually, Jira is one who is able to see the truth clearly. And Muda is a bewildered person. Like Srila Prabhupada says in the Ishopanishad. And the reason for Saubari Muni's bewilderment is Vaishnava Prad, which Gauranga Darshan Prabhu very beautifully elaborated. That is actually the main theme of this pastime. As Prabhupada himself says in one of the purports. So, there are many little lessons in this pastime. Like here, in 41-42 verses, Subramani is saying that, oh, this woman do not like me, so I shall reform my body. So this is a practical example of someone planning and making endeavor for self-gratification. Actually, the endeavor for self-gratification or hankering for self-gratification, both these things lead to misery. He must have known this fact, but he was helplessly dragged into the self-gratification due to the Vaishnava Prada. But anyone embarking on the path of spiritual life should observe that am I making endeavors for pleasing Guru and Krishna, or am I making endeavors for increasing self-gratification? And the beginning of self-gratification is pleasurable, and it inevitably leads to great misery. Like here, he is marrying 50 daughters, although he wanted only one from Mandata King. But when opportunity arose for marrying 50 of them, he married and he expanded samsara. And the more he expanded, the more he suffered. Similarly, in 44th verse, it is said that the 50 daughters of Mandar the king, they gave up their sisterly relationship and they quarreled. Generally, when brothers and sisters in a family, they are helpful to each other, cooperative with each other. They are supposed to put aside their own wishes and wants for the sake of others. But the general trend seen in this world is, if somebody is bent upon self-gratification, they say, forget about relationships. Hell with you. Whether you are brother or sister. People don't care. Like Aurangzeb even killed his own brothers. Similarly, these 50 sisters probably might have been very good friends all these years, because their self-gratification was not hampered. But suddenly, when it came to their marriage, they became greedy and envious of one another.
And the same reason, because transliteration makes one blind. Saubari became blinded by desire for transliteration, by making endeavors. Similarly, these 50 ladies also, they became blinded by desire to marry this man. And they were afraid that the others may become a stumbling block. So, at any cost, they wanted to marry. In this way, both parties, Saubari Muni and this woman, because their main goal is sanctification, they are suffering for both. And also, in 45, 46 verses, it is said that Saubari Muni's austerities resulted in opulent paraphernalia. Elsewhere, Srila Prabhupada explains that someone expert in chanting mantras, he can create both material paraphernalia or he can elevate himself spiritually. So, if one is utilizing one's mantra power for creating material paraphernalia to expand his material life and get entangled, like a silkworm who emanates some liquid from its mouth, and the very same liquid becomes a cocoon in which he gets trapped. Similarly, someone who is expert in chanting, the very same tongue utilized for chanting can become a cause of his entanglement. So Prabhupada quotes this anavritti shabdat. By sound, everything else was created in the material world. And by another sound, namely transcendental sound, the whole material world can be wound up. So one sound creates the material world, another sound can nullify it. But unfortunately, because Saubari Muni has a sankalpa for enjoying material life, he used his tapobalam for material paraphernalia creation. So, tapobhidyam putrakayena sattvam shuddhye tasmat brahma sokyam tu anantam. So, Rishabhadev says that if you do tapasya, that should be divya tapasya, meant for purifying our chitta. And when heart is cleansed, then one can enjoy Brahma Saukhyam. That is actually the goal of pleasing the Supreme Lord and receiving His reciprocation in the form of Brahma Saukhyam. On the contrary, somebody does tapasya for bhautik prapti, then the very same material paraphernalia will become a source of great suffering. And that's what we learn from Saubari's materially oriented austerities. So austerities are great, but the goal of austerity is important. So I also appreciated Gaurav Darshan Prabhu's comparison of Kardama Muni versus Saubari Muni. And Kardama Muni was guided by the Lord. He was given a girl in marriage by the Lord. And even though he created a aerial mansion, only with the intention to please his wife and beget children as a duty the Prajapati is supposed to perform, it is clearly mentioned that he was completely detached and there was not any reduction in his devotional service. So he was actually pleasing the Lord. So his creation of aerial mansion didn't become a stumbling block for him. Whereas in the case of Saubari Muni, it is explained that he struggled hard for sense gratification but was not at all satisfied. Manashashtani, Indriyani, Prakriti Sthani Karshati. And that was not the case with Kardamamani. One sloka says that he remained a great soul, although he provided facilities for Devahuti. That very clearly demarcates Kardamamani's superior position in relation to Subramani's inferior position. Because Kardamamani was a devotee of the Lord, he had received the glance of the Supreme Lord and already pleased the Supreme Lord. So thus he became properly guided, even by performing activities like begetting children, creating aerial mansion, expanding population, etc. And also in text 47, it is said that Mandaka gave up his false prestige. So in the verse number 37, it is mentioned about the opulences of Mandaka king. How wherever the sun rises to where the sun sets, such was the vastness of King Mandaka's opulence. Whereas such a person who is a possessor of such opulence, then his pride was diminished by the opulence of Saubari, which clearly shows material life is all about impressing others and getting impressed by others. And the whole world is about it. Everybody wants to find how to get better than others. And if they cannot, they'll be stunned, they'll be fearful, they may even pull the leg also. So the material world is all about material paraphernalia. And living it is simply competing with one another to get better, to get ahead in material life. And Krishna consciousness is opposed to this. In 1.1.2, Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada writes that spiritual world is a competition-less place. And also devotees of the Lord, they aim at the spiritual world, due to which they don't join the rat race of the material world. So, as long as one is joining the rat race in this material world, and there is always insecurity in the heart, and burning fire of greed for increasing one's opulences to outdo others. Yeah. And in 48 verse, it is clearly mentioned how sankara education always leads to suffering. Dushpurena analenacha, as Lord Krishna also says in Gita. So, this was all known to Subramani. He was certainly a great mystic sage who could even stay underwater for a long period. But despite all that, he became bewildered. And that bewilderment is due to Vaishnava Parag. In one purport, Prabhupada says in Bhagavatam, when one commits Vaishnava Parag, Krishna plants material desires in the heart of that person. And thus bewilders the person to make him avoid committing further and further offenses. So once the material desires are planted, the person becomes busy in material life, which is in fact a safeguard for him in his spiritual life, because he is unable to commit any more aparada. That is Krishna's intention. He diverts the person from spiritual goal to material goal. And in this way, one goes headlong in material life, gets hard knocks from material life, and learns good lessons, and becomes sober, humbled, and then again takes the spiritual life. So one sentence Prabhupada specifically says, with regard to Vaishnava Parag, that one should not impede the activities of a Vaishnava. I think that is in 49 purport. Now, what is the meaning of impeding the activities of a Vaishnava? The Prabhupada says, even when he was trying to preach in India, when he was trying to establish Mayapur temple, there were some envious elements who were trying to stop Prabhupada from purchasing a land for ISKCON in Mayapur. This is one example. Similarly, one becomes afraid of a Vaishnava's prowess, and he stumbles and he puts stumbling blocks in his preaching, in his increase of fame, in his increased activities of Krishna consciousness, with the desire to not allow him to flourish by creating, you know, blasphemous websites, by talking ill of him to reduce his fame, and deprive him of facilities to preach. So, like Mr. N, he was trying to sell the same land to different people. And this is not uncommon in India. Some people do that, so that they can get big money. And Mr. N was thinking, the ISKCON people are also, you know, gullible people, and we can cheat them also. But Prabhupada was not an ordinary person. He was spiritually potent and materially smart. And he was indefeatable, and he was empowered by Krishna. So when Mr. N got into making an effort to cheat Prabhupada, and Prabhupada didn't let get cheated, at that time, this fellow wanted to drive away the devotees from Juhu land, although he had taken some money already, advance money and all. So what all impediments he put? He printed flyers against this con and distributed in the public. He was heading a newspaper where he printed bad things about this con, which were not well true, and he was spreading it in a large way. He also stopped the municipality water supply. He arranged the gundas to come with soda bottle and chain and beat up the devotees. And they came, and they were even pulling the saris of Western ladies. And also, he was telling them to drive away the devotees. So these are practical examples of envious elements who are impeding the activities of a Vaishnava. And that's considered a very great apparatus. And within devotee circle, the devotee's feeling of fear or envy for greatness of a Vaishnava may not resort to such activities like Mr. N. It's very unlikely. But it is likely that out of envy, one may be unable to appreciate Vaishnavas. One may want to minimize their position by blaspheming about them, or cooking stories about them, or spreading rumors about them. So such kind of activities are very displeasing to the Lord. And that actually makes one's heart very hard. And when heart becomes hard, there is no juice of Krishna conscious experience. Then in order to experience some juice, in want of that juice, one takes to material life. And so people turn to married life, hoping that they can get the juice from women and children and material progress and expanded material life. And this is history that keeps repeating time to time. So as Vaishnavas, if you are serious about going back to God, we mind our own business and purifying our heart, and open and willing to receive good advice for purifying our hearts. And when we see great Vaishnavas, then we can extol Krishna's glories, how he is empowering devotees to do things which are humanly impossible. And it is said, Brahmande Tarite Shakti Dhare Jane Jane. It is said, one Vaishnava is capable of delivering a whole Brahmanda. those who were governing Mahaprabhu's followers. So, by learning to genuinely and heartily appreciate the glories of a Vaishnavas, then one's heart remains very simple. And one can save oneself from Vaishnavaprad. In this way, we see Saubarimani, he offended Garuda, who was a personal bird carrier of Lord Vishnu and an intimate associate of Lord Vishnu, by cursing him that if you come into this territory, you know, you will die. Of course, Topa says Garuda was not obliged by the Saubari's advice. Still, he was decent in following that rule. He didn't go to the territory. He didn't go. On the other hand, Saubarimani made a friendship with the Society of Fishes. So he was a social welfare actor. He joined the Fishes Club and promised them protection. But ultimately, could he do that? You know, you will see eventually, Kaliyanath came there and all the fishes died. So he could not protect the fishes. And he himself went with the purpose of penance underwater. That also didn't succeed. You know. And he came out and married. And most interestingly, the very same fishes whom he wanted to protect became the cause of his fall down. So in this way we learn a great lesson. Any wonderful plan which is whimsical, independent of Lord's interest, should be given up. Otherwise, such useless plans, which may appear to be great plans, will end in great disaster. And all this happened because of his offense to Garuda. It's a very, although it's a short chapter, it's a very valuable chapter for all progressive sadhakas. To learn lessons from Saubarimani's character. But wonderfully, this chapter has a sweet ending that Saubarimani, along with his wife, they will go back to Godhead. So, Madhura may will come up here. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much, Prabhu, for giving
this. Thank you so much. And so, it was not too much echoing, no?
Ah, Prabhu?
It was echoing.
Echo. No, no, Prabhu, it was okay, Prabhu, it was clear.
Thank you, thank you very much, Prabhu. So, hope I didn't talk too much.
No, no, Prabhu, that was nice. We would like to hear your phone classes for 3 hours, Prabhu.
thank you so much, Prabhu.
Nice, wonderful insights. And as Prabhuji was mentioning this, any wonderful plan which is independent of Lord's interests or offenses to devotees will only fail. I just remembered this Samantakamani episode. So Samantakamani was given to Satrajit by sun god, and then that Samantakamani is said to be creator of great auspiciousness. Wherever that Samantakamani is there, no untimely death, no natural calamities or anything. So many benedictions are given. But because Satrajit doubted Krishna that he must have stolen Samantakamani or he must have killed his brother, so the Samantakamani, which was supposed to create auspiciousness, created such great inauspiciousness in his life, and he faced an untimely death. So, like that. So, thank you very much. Thank you so much, Radhishyam Prabhu, for such beautiful insights. Okay. So we will conclude. So tomorrow we will discuss 7th chapter. Okay. Few announcements. Oh, you have some point. Right? Yes, Prabhu. Prabhu, your pen.
Prabhu, you mentioned points from Madhuri Kadambini for the Vaishnava Prad and stepping on the shadow of Vaishnava and things like that. Now, and also greeting them and seeing them being happy.
Not being happy.
Now, some devotees by nature may not be like, they may be too much introverted type, they may not display those characteristics. Now, how should such people also take this up, like, in that sense, welcoming and greeting?
Okay. I can give you a very theoretical answer, but I don't have very deep realization, or definitely I don't have practice of all this. Today I purposely spoke from Madhuri Kadambini so that at least for next few days I will behave properly with Vaishnavas. That was actually literally my intention. There is no other intention in distracting you from Bhagavatam and then speaking Madhuri Kadambini or something. So, as I mentioned in the class only, this attitude of being offensive to devotees is very dangerous. Now, if you are an introvert, if somebody is an introvert, if some devotee comes from Chowpatty here, you need not go and embrace him. Right? Others will go, so and so Prabhu ki jai, and then they will say so many things. Some are like extrovert, they say that. Some may not say that. Some may even feel shy or whatever to even look that side also. They are in their own world. But someone who is expressing so much pleasure on his face by seeing that Vaishnava is not necessarily loving that Vaishnava also. Someone who is not showing such great pleasure, or he is introvert, or he is not responding so much, it's not that he dislikes that Vaishnava also. So basically, from this Vaishnava's perspective point of view, what he thinks about that Vaishnava? Are we thinking like that? Or are we having respect for him? Or what exactly is the your internal opinion or internal consciousness about him? That matters more than your external expression. Especially in dealing with Vaishnavas, external expression also matters, because now internally you may reconcile that I don't have a negative mentality or whatever, but externally how he perceives you also matters. Right? There are two things here. From your side you may be clear, but is he clear from his side? Because you didn't respond and then you turned your face away or whatever, for whatever reason. You may be thinking of something else and then you didn't greet him. Right? He may perceive it as insult, or he may feel bad, he may feel hurt, or he may think that, okay, what is happening with him? So, technically, logically speaking, we have nothing to do with that. But as far as Vaishnava etiquette is concerned, his displeasure will also affect us. There is no doubt in it. Who is right, who is wrong is a detail. Who is hurt because of whom? That matters a lot. It's very important. Although you may have to, managers, especially for manners, you may have to deal with certain person in certain way because of what he has done. And he's crying, "Arey, I don't want to do it, I'm sorry." He's saying, but it's like you can't forgive him at all. Forgive him means like externally. Internally you may not hold anything about him, but externally you have to give him some punishment or something like that. Right, as a manager, it's a responsibility. But for all the tears that he had shed, you have to take the reaction. There is no doubt. Okay, there is no doubt. Who did right, who did wrong, as I said, is secondary to who is hurt because of whose behavior. That becomes primary. After all, he is following four regulative principles, he is chanting 16 rounds, he is a devotee trying to advance in Krishna consciousness. These are sufficient reason for us to receive a reaction when we cause some displeasure to him. Does that make sense? Right. You may not be having an intention to hurt him or disrespect him, but if he feels hurt because of our action, then we'll have to take some reaction. The magnitude of the reaction may vary, but some reaction is, this is my understanding, my experience also. Yes, Ru.
Answer.
Yes.
How he will get the reaction?
He has to get. There is no doubt.
Because it is his seva.
It is his seva. If and that seva is unavoidable, someone has to do that seva. But someone who is doing that seva has to absorb some reactions. There is no doubt about it. Right? But if you want to serve, in spite of absorbing reactions, you will continue to serve. Right? If the reactions are overwhelming you so much that you are getting distracted from your devotional path only, better give up that seva. Take some other safer seva. Someone has to do that seva. Someone will do. But you only have to take reactions all the while. Let someone else take reaction. Right? You are supposed to ask to write 54 times Maha Mantra to everyone who is coming late. You observe a lot of reactions. You gave up. Someone else is taking care. Right? You didn't give up or? You didn't suffer. Okay. Because you never asked them only to write or what? Okay. Good. Then you are doing it. Basically, Prabhu, when you are doing that seva to cause any inconvenience to the mind of a devotee, internally, you should prepare your consciousness. I have nothing against him personally. Personally, I respect him for what he is. But managerially, I don't approve what he has done. Right? You see, many senior devotees, when they are dealing with some juniors who are doing some mistakes or whatever, they will correct them. They will chastise them. They will become angry on them. After an hour or after some time, if you go to them, they are absolutely normal. Right? So, that negative interaction, that will not affect them. Right? Because they did it with proper consciousness. Right? They don't hold grudge on someone for longer times. Right? If we have to safeguard ourselves, you may do the needful. We have to be practical. You may do the needful to do the service. Right? You have to correct people. You have to give feedbacks to people. All that have to be done. However, without having any personal grudge towards that person. Personally, you can't just think about that person. 10 people you have to give feedback. All 10 people care about, you just have to, your brain will crash only. Your brain cannot handle so many negative impressions on so many people. Right? Anything else? Anyone wants to add anything, subtract anything? Padmakni Mahaprabhu, you want to subtract anything? Is that okay? Make sense? It has to be done with great amount of hesitation. If you have to correct someone or give feedback to someone, you have to think 10 times before doing it. Right? Then only you will survive. Otherwise, whereabouts will be unknown. Yes? Anything else? Yes, sir.
And there is a proverb also in Bengali that when a judge is judging a criminal, that he should feel pain with the judge. It's a material I just read in my studies, that Bengali proverb, that if he takes pleasure in giving him punishment, that is not proper punishment.
That's what. He can't take pleasure. Someone is doing some goof up. If you are becoming ecstatic, hey, now I got a chance, I caught him. Now I will discuss with everyone and then sometimes it could happen because of friendly relation or whatever. I mean, he is okay with it, you are okay with it. That also is not very good. Right? Even if it is our hostel culture sometimes comes within. I often pull the legs of Leela Kirtan Prabhu, I am admitting. Right? But sometimes it could come, but it's not very good. Gauram Prabhu gave a very beautiful seminar on seminar, one VTA class. If you think disrespect is equal to intimacy, I am so intimate with him, I can do whatever the way I want. I can publicly just crack some jokes on him, I can pull his legs. So I may think like that, but if you think disrespect is equal to intimacy, then that is equal to stupidity. Prabhupada said. Out of intimacy, you can't disrespect someone. Right? You may be intimate, but that disrespect as a part of intimacy will disrupt your relationship over a long run. Right? If that continues, that habit continues, okay, one may overdo it. So all these are, one has to take care. I'm speaking to myself, literally. Anything else on this topic? Okay. So next month, yes, Prabhu.
Raji, here we see Durvasa Muni, Saubari Muni, we see lamenting his fall down because of fish, but in any translation we didn't see that he was lamenting because of Vaishnava Prat. So whether he knew that this was a reaction of his Vaishnava Prat of Garuda.
Whether he knew or not, that is not very much mentioned. Now in Durvasa Muni's case, he got the reaction for his Vaishnava Prat. Or you could say he didn't get the reaction for his Vaishnava Prat. The only reaction he got is just to have a tour of the cosmos for 1 year. That's the only reaction. But actually, Sudarshan did not actually punish him, kill him. Right? And so he was protected. He didn't get the actual reaction of being killed by Sudarshan. Right? He was protected because he humbly begged forgiveness. But here he got the reaction. Our Saubari, he got the reaction. He fell down from his position completely. Durvasa Muni, it was just a 1 hour, 1 year tour, universal tour only. But for Saubari Muni, he actually engaged in sexual affairs and then he actually united with 50 ladies and so many things happened. It's like total fall down case. But the good thing, glorious ending of the whole episode, both episodes is they were brought back to proper consciousness. So Barumani came back to proper consciousness, he was engaged in devotional service of Krishna. Now, his awareness of Vaishnava Parada, the connection between his fall down and offending Garuda, I mean, that's, I didn't read anything about it, I can't comment on it, I can't say anything.
Because he like didn't repent or ask forgiveness for Garuda's offense like that. How his offense is rectified?
Yeah, that's it. He's going to Garuda and asking forgiveness for what he has done. That's, I never read that episode. Did anyone hear anything like that? I didn't hear them in lectures also. I don't know whether he has done or not done. We don't know. That's never recorded. That's not recorded. Or we didn't come in contact with such records. I didn't hear or I didn't read anything about it. Okay. So tomorrow we'll have class at 10:30. So I'll have to take the overview session of that junior batch. Some 8:30 to 10:30 I'll take for them. Then 11 o'clock we'll have our session here, 9.7. Okay, so next month we are going for Yatra, Jagannath Puri Yatra. On 13th, right? 13th? So how many of you are unable to come because of health issues or whatever? Varad Gopal Prabhu and anyone else? Everyone who is sitting in this assembly, you are also, you can't come? You are not sure. Okay. I think you need to confirm by whatever, what time? We need to cancel the ticket, then what? You can tell him according to your condition in the first week of July. That is sufficient, no? First week of July we can cancel if needed. Fine. So we'll sit together for some discussions. Then after 9th canto, which we will complete in maybe in whatever 8, 9, 10 classes more maximum. Already 4 classes happened, eh? Okay. So once we complete 9th canto, we'll have overview of 9th canto and we'll have presentations on canto 7 and 8, 7, 8, 9 combined. Then we'll have grand test. Then we will assign projects for all of you. So after 9 cantos are over, you are entering the second year. You came on June 15th, right? So by June 16th. So by this June 16th, your 1 year is completed, and technically speaking, we are supposed to complete 9 cantos. So we'll complete, maybe a week or two delay, we'll complete. Then we'll assign projects, and in the second year, you will have having only 4 classes in a week. Every Monday is a break for a project. Then what else? Most of you will be engaged in Vrindavan Forest project, and still we are working out the logistics, how to do it, because it's a time-bound project. It's not like a regular academic project that that is based on Bhagavatam and CC, like total applying the book knowledge. You have to do much more than that. So we'll discuss and then confirm. And we'll have one retreat after your 9th canto. In that retreat, we will cover the 10 topics of Bhagavatam, right? 10 topics of Bhagavatam. Just one seminar, which has a lot of references to Sattva Sandarbha and mainly Bhagavatam. Hopefully Gauram Prabhu will give that. Please pray. Yeah. Mostly in the retreat time only we'll announce your projects. Exciting? So we'll have to make yourselves into teams. That depends on your skill set and your performance so far. So that's how we'll make teams. Team of 2 or 3. Excitement. Now there is feast. 10th candle. By this one thing.